American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Monday, September 29th, 2008. And that's right, this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global sit rep. Ooh, almost said a dirty word. On core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Right Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing to this program, you are as well. You can follow up on these and all of my news stories and check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, NWNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Radio Red Mercury, and we got two new radio networks, which have actually been carrying us for a really long time, but I didn't know that they were, so I've totally screwed it up and not actually had links to them or anything like that, but now we found out about them, so hooray, there's two more radios that we didn't know about. One's called Osprey Networks, hooray, which I think I used to say their name before, but then I wasn't sure if they were on or off or what happened there, so my fault. I should have clearly been investigating. And as well, let's not forget creekradio.net. Go check it out. Really slick little site. He's got Newsreel up there pumping out the news shows. Thank you very much for distribution. And if you know of places where you can get Newsreel that I don't talk about, I need to know about that, okay? I seriously do. I need somebody to, you know, let me know so we can get an accurate media list and give credit where credit is due, because after all, these people are the ones who are distributing out the information. And let's not forget that Thursdays, roughly 7 o'clock thereabouts, whenever I can get my ass into my basement, I will crank out at Second Life Node Archers 137102 9er 9er 9er, so that you can enjoy the show live. That would be Thursdays at 7, and then rebroadcast after post-production, but, you know, you got to be pretty hardcore to the core in order to make it to the Second Life gig, because, you know, the buried entry there is probably going to be the usability of the Second Life interface, which, please God, you people in the Second Life world are so smart. You are so smart. You are so great and noble. Please, please, please would you work on the interface. Thank you so much. Much blessings. Blessed be. All that good stuff. Let's get into the feedback right off the top. Hey, Sean! Oh, pardon me, wrong. Hi, Sean. Long-time listener from the London, UK here. United Kingdoms. Good. Good for you. Welcome to the Big Brother State. I just wanted to send you a big thank you. My life was a mess a few years ago. I was ready to throw in the towel. I genuinely think that the work you've done with Rant Media has helped me sort out my life. Has helped me sort my life out. I'm halfway through Army basic training at the moment, and I've never been happier. What you do over there matters. Thank you. Wow. You know, I'm so great. Jeez. Thanks, man. And it's nice, you know, to get an email like that from every now and again, rather than, dear Sean, you're an idiot, here's all the reasons why. But yes, and good luck to you. Indeed. Anyway, and keep your head down, please don't die. Dear Sean, in response to your comments about using those FRMS radios, I have two words for you. Citizens Band. You can find CB radios all over the place, and they're a hell of a lot more standard than those Garmin Rhinos. Although you lose the mapping function, I've heard the function is flaky at best anyway, you're a hell of a lot more options when it comes to the frequency. Just a thought, Fat Ninja. Well, Fat Ninja drives a rocket rig through the deserts, and I would generally say that CB would be the way to go. Maybe some CB broadcasting, you know, how hard would it be to put a CB in our cars, you know? All we need to do is get somebody to make a website for it. We could attach it to, you know, something WOG-ish. We could get the WOG freaks on the go. We could start using it in default at WOG meets. Really good way to hook up, you know, get to this GPS grid coordinates, turn on the CB. It's guaranteed, no matter who makes your GPS, you should be able to get within CB range. I mean, come on, you know, usually they're only off by a couple meters at best. Huh? Come on, that'd be really cool. I think it'd be cool. So very, very good idea, Fat Ninja, you big fat guy, you. Beloved Sean, wow. You know, this is when they start saying things like beloved, you know, that's when I get a little bit worried. That's when I'm like, it's like, you know, I'm the kind of gamer that, you know, my whole world is if I was to, you know, show up at the end of my day and I go into my single bungalow and there, what I've never seen before is two beautiful young twins who are nubile and sexy and want to get it on with me, I'm going to think it's a trap and immediately run from the room, probably throwing grenades. You know, that's just kind of the kind of game masters I had in my world. But anyway, beloved Sean, just dropping you a line to point out some like-minded people who you will surely find amusing, if not endearing. The ECA, Entertainment Consumers Association, is a group of people Wikipedia calls the Entertainment Consumers Association, ECA, is United States-based, non-partisan, non-government, non-profit organization dedicated to the interests of individuals who play computer and video games in the United States. This is a classic case of consumers stepping forward and manning up, becoming part of the solution instead of the whining minority, which only serves to make the rest of the group look bad. I ran into their booth at the Penny Arcade Expo this year at the end of August 08 and was pleased to see the professional demeanor and overall responsibility the ECA presents. So I was so impressed that I joined. Ha ha! I'm being used as a propaganda shill. I would also like to direct your attention to a few other sites, save theinternet.com, as well as the twin sites freepress.net and freepress.org. I encourage you to check them out. I think you'll be very interested in what freepress.net has to say. Thank you again for the information you bring to the table, and remind people not to hate the media or the machine, but to become it and make changes from within. It's all too easy to feel powerless in the gears of industry, but working together we have power, and the power of the consumer's dollar and the voter's ballot. And that was sent in by Star Spider. Thank you very much, Star Spider. Hey! Well, the truth is that, you know, we can get in and manipulate it from within, but I've been thinking about this. You know, I've been kind of working on the whole idea of how we can do a little bit more than just infiltrate their companies and take over. I kind of had this idea that, you know, what if, like, okay, so they make super corporations, right? Like, that's what they're doing, right? They're making super corporations right now with the whole $700 billion bailout thing that's going on. There's all these, like, megacorps that are buying out other megacorps. Eventually, the Darwinian down pressure is gonna happen where there's only going to be 5 or 6 megacorps, and there's no way, because it's taken hundreds of years for these megacorps to build up this kind of power, that any small group would be able to actually attack them and take them out. Exactly, Panacheba and stuff like that, right? These are the ultimate in the megacorps. So we're seeing this all come together. So what we want to do, and here's a big idea. You know, this is kind of what the WOG idea is what if the WOGs took over one of them? You know what I mean? Like, what if you just talked to everybody, everybody got on net, and all of a sudden one day, you know, the CEOs woke up and everybody was like, we are Borg. And the only people that weren't Borg were the CEOs, you know? And you just sort of, you know, take it over. It's like, that reminds me of my favorite Monty Python sketch. Probably my favorite. You know, when you're younger, you go for the different ones. But the one I really enjoy is The Accountants. I can't remember which episode it's in. Somebody's got it. I know, it's a sin. It's my favorite episode. I want to say Now for Something Completely Different, but it's not. It's not. It might be Meaning of Life. Actually, I think it is right. James Reef, Eddie got a Meaning of Life, where it's the accountants, and they break away from their desks, and they throw all of their desks out the windows, and they kill their managers, and they take this office building, and they throw out sales, and the office building, like, fucks off, and they go sailing across the city, and, Crimson Permanent Assurance, yes, that's what we need, Photoshop, for me, we need the Naval Division of the Army of the Flying Monkeys, which should be Crimson Permanent Assurance, that should be definitely a WOG organization, to be sure. Somebody could send that in, that would just be awesome, because, I mean, those guys were just the kings. I have another funny story I could relate on this, but unfortunately, I got this show to do. So let's get on to some news right off the top. Intense city news! Well, it's called the United States! In Reno, a few tents cropping up hard by the railroad tracks, pitched by men left with nowhere to go once the emergency winter shelter had closed for the summer. Then others appeared. People have just lost their jobs to the alien economy. Newcomers have just moved to Reno for work and discovered that no one was hiring. Within weeks, more than 150 people were living in tents as big and small, barely a foot apart, in a pitch of dirt slated to be a parking lot for Campus of Shelters Reno is building up for the homeless population. Like many other cities, Reno has found itself with a tent city and a camp of people with nowhere else to go. From Seattle to Athens, homeless advocacy groups and city agencies are reporting the most visible rise in homeless encampments in a generation. Nearly 61% of local and state homeless coalitions say they've experienced a rise in homelessness since the foreclosure crisis began in 2007. Do you still fold that those two are connected? The foreclosure crisis and a rise in homelessness. What are the odds? According to a report by the National Coalition of the Homelessness, the group says the problem has worsened since the report's release in April, with foreclosures mounting, gas and food prices rising, the job market tightening, the robots attacking, the chickens running, and water still being wet. It is clear that poverty, homelessness have increased, said Michael Stoops, acting executive director. You know, if I could read today, that'd be awesome. Said Michael Stoops, acting executive director of the coalition, the economy is in chaos. We're in an unofficial recession, and Americans are worried from the homelessness and the middle class about their future. Well, you know, when when this article came out, it was absolutely nothing compared to how people are freaking out now with this, you know, this billion-dollar bailout thing. But you got to wonder, you know, we're being steered here. We're all like, oh, you know, are we seeing the truth here? Or are they just drawing it? Is this a summer of the shark? Has there always been homelessness? Or are they just selling this to me? You know, I always wonder about stuff like that, you know. But I would say that with the way America is in real trouble, and there's a lot of people that have been saying that America has been in real trouble for a long time. And the article goes on to talk about how we have a very serious crisis going on with homelessness, essentially. We've got shanty towns happening all over the place. And this is supposed to be in America, you know, every chicken in the stew pot, that whole thing. You know, I thought that was the whole idea here. And now we've got these people building shantytowns. So this is why these stories are not here to scare you. This is why we do this. This is why we're trying to reach people. You are using a computer. If you are listening to this or you know somebody who has access to a computer, that is the magical gateway of knowledge. You need to make sure that you take responsibility for what you put in your head. Because if you don't control your own thoughts, I promise you somebody else will. And they will exploit you, and you will become a victim, okay? So we do not want that. Do not dance for the little monkeys who are trying to entertain you with, you know, distraction. Pay attention to what's going on, okay? They're starting to load up cattle cars. So now is the time that we need to be more alert and not, you know, falling apart. We got homelessness. The article goes on here. Go check it out. They talk about how these homeless cities are popping up all over the place. You know, why do you suppose that is? You know, After Now was not just, you know, complete fiction. I took ideas and projected it. And I hope to God it doesn't come to pass. You know, and that was the whole purpose of why we're doing this in the first place. Now, of course, in order for, rather than deal with this directly, you know, it's cheaper to just to try to control the gradual descent into darkness as people die. And the best way to do that is with technology, right? So let's get into some scanner news sent in by Wyandi. Great story here. Security personnel working for the Department of Homeland Security may soon be able to remotely monitor crowds for behavior signals of a terrorist. This was sent in by Wyandi First. A couple of people sent me this one. Using a computer system that scans their pulses, body language, breathing rates, and facial temperatures. The program called the Future Attribute Screening Technology, or FAST, works as a combination of custom software and crowd monitoring body sensors strategically placed at airports and U.S. border crossings and other public high security areas. In simulated scenarios, you know, this reminds me of that scene from Equilibrium where they set up the scanners and they were just scanning people as they were going by and they were able to pick people up. And there's a couple other films where they just do that and they set up the scanners, scan the crowds, get the ones that are troublemakers, and then, you know, they're removed and they go off to the re-education facilities. But anyway, in the simulated scenarios, the Department of Homeland Security says FAST is accurate in detecting suspicious behavior from almost 4 out of 5 cases. It's accurate in detecting suspicious behavior. It's accurate in detecting suspicious behavior in almost 4 out of 5 cases. So 3 out of 5 cases. So 60% of the time, it's okay at detecting suspicious behavior. Which, suspicious behavior isn't a crime. So, 60% of the time, you get a chance at something that suspicious behavior is only correct. What, like, maybe 50%? So, you know, if we start to, you know, anyway, we see where we're going with this. In almost 4 out of 5 cases. So, 3 out of 5 cases. Anyway, One such trial run recently in an equestrian ranch in Maryland paid more than 140 participants $150 to walk through Fast's sensor array. A handful were given instructions to act shifty, evasive, deceptive, or even hostile. Fast had a very effective accuracy rate, about 78% on malintent detection and 80% on deception, according to spokesman John Verico. You know what? This is such a money grab. You know, give me a break. You tell actors to act out, you know, so they're obviously trying to project that. So if an actor is trying to act shifty and hostile, you know, a child would be able to pick that up. You know, and this is the kind of thing that they use to draw in funding. Maybe this is Gen 1. I mean, does it sound like a sexy idea? Hell yeah, it does. Will they throw money at it? You bet they will. You bet they will. China is really interested in this. A lot of these guys are interested with this. And if you get people who use the idea of something scanning you to figure out what you're thinking, how long is it before we get some kind of remote EEG thing and we got brain scans and then it's all over but the crying? Well, Sean, you're paranoid. You're paranoid, Sean. You're talking about hunter-killer, you know, George Orwell stuff. That's the movies. That's not really going to happen. In hunter-killer news, thanks to Big Brother and Lord for this story, the U.S. Army is looking to the future, and its researchers are trying to build solar-powered winged vehicles for combat and surveillance, which means that they don't have to land. The new combat aircrafts will destroy the enemy target without any damage to the environment. If that's possible. And they will also prevent the army from destroying friendly or non-hostile targets. Well, that's a plus! Anytime we can avoid blue-on-blue is okay by me! The solar-powered aircraft are called Swarming Micro-Air Vehicles, or SMARV. SMAV. And they will create a network which leads to SMAVnet project of the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne, Switzerland. Or SMAVnet stands for Swarming Micro Air Vehicle Networks for Communication Relay, and the Micro Autonomous Science and Technology Center will test this technique. I don't know, I think they should honestly come up with a better acronym for that. I'd go for one that was like Harpy or something, you know, maybe cool. I always wanted, you know, to have a Harpy one. I think that'd be neat. But anyway, I just, you know, I like the acronyms. The mass certification from the U.S. Army Labs is working together with the University of Maryland, the University of Michigan, the University of Pennsylvania, and with BAE Systems. All of these will try and develop SMAV for a period of 5 years. And if all goes according to plan, they will continue to research for 5 more years. And chances are, you know, do you see a trend forming here? A networked swarm can coordinate through sensing, communication, and mobility to form a virtual superorganism composed of a number of flying vehicles that can penetrate any structure and find targets of interest. That end quote. Let me read that one to you again. A network swarm can coordinate through sensing, communication, and mobility to form a virtual superorganism composed of a number of flying vehicles that can penetrate any structure and find targets of interest, end quote. Wow, said Professor and Chairman Daryl Pines at the Maryland Aerospace Engineering Department, which is also a secret headquarters of COBRA. Professor Pines and his team will try two different approaches in developing SMAV's behavior, and they have a good starting point thanks to SMAVnet's project was based on communication between solar-powered birds in order to gather as much information as possible about the surroundings. As I aforementioned, the U.S. Army researcher will design behavior of the SMAV using two different approaches. One will be based on artificial evolution to create the controllers, and the other one is to use the searching capability of the Army ants, which create pheromones paths in order to find food. What could possibly go wrong? The project is only the beginning, and for the moment, the USA Army didn't give too many details. However, I don't expect them. We wouldn't want our enemies to get their hands on this technology. Isn't that great? We're going to build gigantic robotic killer bee swarms. Yeah, you know, that's going in the next After Now book. Anyway, in Skynet news, because you got to have some great big brain, right? You got to have the brain controlling, you know, the whole SMAVs. You know, you got to have that, because if you don't have the SMAVs, then, well, what have you got, you know? In Skynet news, the U.S. military's new space-based communications network opens a glimpse at the sort of data rates and network you might be using on mobile devices within the next decade, if your mobile device is your collar, which you're wearing around your neck. See, what this is talk about the new satellite net that the Army's setting up. And once this thing goes up, man, you want to get on the WOGNet, this would be the one to get on. After being plagued with the project overruns and scaling back of the final system, the U.S. military's next-generation satellite communications network is another step closer to reality, with the completion of the payload module for the third and final advanced extremely high-frequency satellite. The advanced EHF communication satellites are enhanced versions of the existing MilStar constellation, which are scheduled to replace, but they aren't without their problems. Although the EHF band is a relatively lightly used part of the electromagnetic spectrum, which is 30 to 300 gigahertz, it's for a good reason. Atmospheric attenuation is the biggest problem faced on this band, especially around the 60 gigahertz. However, frequencies are viable for short distances. Terrestrial band communication links, such as microwave internet and telecommunications links, which are already operated in this band. Millimeter wave radar, probably best known as the radar that can see through your clothes, but not your skin, also operates within this band. Designed to avoid the problematic frequencies that are more susceptible to attenuation, but accepting increasing overall atmospheric attenuation, are an increasing number of military and civil satellite systems that are using this band for uplink and downlink, as well as inter-satellite communication. Inter-satellite communication is really where EHF equipment shines. No atmosphere, small antennas with high data rates. Civilian systems are currently around the KU band, Intelsat, providing data rates of up to 2 to 4 megabits, 14 gigahertz, uplink, 12 gigahertz, downlink. However, these rates have trickled into everyday users' hands for remote and mobile internet access. It is more common that the aggregator will access this system link rate and use that to portion out the local internet access. Systems such as this are in use for remote Australian territories like Cocos and Christmas Islands and form the backbone of Boeing's Stillborn Connection in-flight internet access. High ongoing access costs basically share the overall cost of a satellite, and the limited access slots help keep the technology away from everyday use at this time. Militaries and governments around the globe also lease access to these circuits where they when they need added capability, with Intelsat and Marsat system being used first in the first Gulf War. Advanced EHF is designed to provide 24-hour coverage from 65 north to 65 south across the K and KA sub-bands. And when combined with the prototype extended data rate, XDR, terminals and systems, this will offer up to 8.2 megabits data rates from around 4,000 terminals in concurrent use per satellite. Okay, per satellite footprint. Okay, so that's 4,000 terminals doing 8.2 megs each. All right, within the footprint of that satellite. Whether that scales to 12,000 systems in concurrent use globally isn't clear from source material. Within the tri-satellite constellation, the inter-satellite EHF links will allow terminals on opposite sides of the globe to communicate in near real time without the use of a terrestrial link. Combined with smaller directional antennas, the various options for anti-jamming technology, it represents a significant military capability for the United States. It also allows for, if they're going to get those kind of data rates, I mean, you could totally do telepresence with like robots and stuff like that, where you've got pilots in the United States flying planes all over the world. Or, you know, suicide drones or missiles or what have you. You know what I mean? It's pretty wild stuff. Netric-centric warfare technologies are looking forward to use the capability that these systems will provide in their pet theories, but if civil use of the internet has shown anything, it's that data traffic will expand to fill links available to it. So the overall added benefit will have to wait to be seen. Of course, it'll mean that even in a war zone, you won't be immune to 100 megabit PowerPoint presentations clogging up your network. Already plans are being drawn up for the transformational satellite communication system, TSAT, which will replace the advanced EHF starting sometime in 2013, provided we don't all die in 2012. Anyway, however, it is already facing funding troubles. Probably something to do with the $700 billion scam. But anyway, this could be problematic, with the advanced EHF still struggling to reach capability and finally launch not scheduled, not scheduled until April of 2010. Dropping the fourth satellite from the advanced EHF constellation has been planned to give the USAF time to implement the TSAT more rapidly. If GPS and remote imaging, think Google Earth, have proven anything, it is that technology initially developed for military purposes and extremely expensive for initial civilian use will eventually reach the point where it forms part of our daily lives without us ever being conscious of the massive investment to get to that point. Which is true. I mean, when you think about the interconnectivity that has come to exist, like, the internet really does evolve. You know, it really does. And it's kind of a wild thing when you think about it. I mean, I'm pretty I'm pretty impressed, you know, to be alive at the time that I am. I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, sometimes technology can be used for kind of neat stuff. See, technology itself isn't good or evil. It's how people use it. So even some inventions are good and bad. But, you know, it's all... realistically, it's about how you use it. Don't blame the sword. Blame the arms that wields it. That's what brings us to our next story. In Head Jack News! This one was sent in by New Day Dawning. This is a hell of a story here. The U.S. Army has recently awarded a 5-year, $4 million contract to researchers at the University of California at Irvine, led by UCI's Mike DeZuma, Carnegie Mellon University, and University of Maryland to study the concept. It will likely be a decade before the thought helmet becomes a reality, but the rough technology is already under investigation. Researchers have been working on other brain-computer interfaces, such as emotive systems, brainwave headset for video games, which is expected to be available commercially next summer. Interesting. So, it's probably going to be, I think that is, I'm not too sure how the actual time and date on this story. I believe it's a new story. I'm not too sure if the emotive systems is out. I do know that there's some other gaming augment. You can get a EEG band for use as a mouse, like a mind mouse, essentially. That you can train and use that, and that's available right now from NCIX. But anyway, you know, it's interesting that they're even going to be following this, and I want to see how this gets into the civilian market, because maybe this is something we can use. The Army's version, of course, would be more sophisticated and reliable than a gaming helmet. To make the thought helmet a feasible piece of equipment for soldiers, scientists need to combine advances in computing power together with the understanding of the human brain, and let's not forget to make the thing tough. At the moment, the thought helmet concepts consist of 128 sensors buried in the soldier's helmet. Soldiers would need to think in a clear, formulaic way, which is similar to how they are trained to talk. The key challenge making the system work is a software system that can read electroencephalogram, EEG, generated by the sensor data, to pick up when the soldier is thinking words and what those words are. Very, very interesting stuff. Now, there's, and if you go to my live journal, you'll see that I have a photo of this dude with this hookup on him. It looks pretty wild. Because the brain is a complex system and generates large amounts of data, researchers must also make improvements in computational power. Soldiers will have to be trained to think loudly to make it easier for the system to pick up the words and the brain's background noise. You ever see that movie Firefox? That old Clint Eastwood movie? If you ever get a chance, check out Firefox. And this is exactly what how the Firefox plane, which is kind of funny because now they have the Mozilla thing called Firefox. You can fly Firefox with your thought helmet. Wow, it's a crazy world we live in, eh? Also, every individual's EEG symbols are a little different, so users and computers will have to be calibrated so the computers recognize each person's unique mental pattern. You know, this is where I'm honestly thinking that maybe that's what I should do with patrolling Season 6. You know, what if I were to start building myself a power armor? You know, honest to God, maybe it'll be wheels, maybe it'll be a tachycoma, but it'd be something that you sit in because you're planned for the point that you're going to be so old you can't move around. And you start training your EEG now, and you keep upgrading the software until as your body dies, the robot power armor suit you have for yourself just continues to, you know, kind of get stronger and stronger and stronger. It would be pretty cool, you know, and eventually you just sort of do, maybe that's the way we're gonna like do the first consciousness transfer. I'll get right on that. But anyway, in early versions, recipients will most likely hear messages rendered by robotic voices in their headphones, but researchers also think it's possible to render commands in the speaker's own voice, as well as indicate the location of the speaker relative to the listener. For people concerned about the ethics of this technology, Elmar Schmeisler, Army neuroscientist, reassures us that the technology will not allow mind reading. Well, what would an Army neuroscientist have to hide? As he explains, since every user has to be trained with the system, it would be impossible to use the technology against the individual's will or without their cooperation. Instead, researchers are interested in potential civilian benefits. One such application might be a Bluetooth headpiece, which could read the speaker's thoughts and transmit them to a person they're calling. Yeah, that's also called a bug. But anyway, eliminating those loud, one-sided conversations in public. Yeah, absolutely. Now, here's something that last week we did the... I covered a story talking about how they had this new pod, you know, that they were doing, basically a cave system. It was a commercially based cave system for, you know, immersing how you get into the internet. Well, we've taken it one step further. Now we got, in Holodeck news, sent to me by Icehawk, its name sounds like something out of science fiction, but Star Cave at the University of California, San Diego, is now science fact. The virtual reality environment allows a group of scientists to venture into worlds as small as nanoparticles, as big as the cosmos, permitting new insights that can fuel discoveries in many fields. Early users of the Star Cave include UC San Diego researchers in biomedicine, neuroscience, structural engineering, archaeology, earth science, genomics, and art history, and other disciplines, basically everybody. The 360-degree sound screen surrounding the viewer, the Star Cave is a five-sided virtual reality room where scientific models and animations are projected in stereo on 360-degree screens surrounding the room, and on the floor as well. It was constructed by the U.S. San Diego Division of the California Institute for Telecommunications and Information Technology, CALIT, at less than $1 million. So it cost less than $1 million to build this thing. The Star Cave, the immersive environment, costs approximately the same as earlier VR systems while offering a much higher resolution and contrast. When you're inside the Star Cave, the quality of the image is stunning, said Thomas DeFanti, director of visualization at CALIT 2 and one of the pioneers of VR systems. The Star Cave supports 2040 vision, and the images are very high contrast thanks to the room's unique shape and special screens that allow viewers to use 3D polarized glasses. You can fly over a strand of DNA and look in front and behind you and below you. So you wear 3D stereoscopic glasses, and now you've got a 3D room that you're in. So it's like you're walking around inside of a Gen 1 holodeck is exactly what this is. This, you could build one of these. This would not be that difficult to build, actually. You could probably build one of these out of bed sheets, a bunch of overhead projectors that you run stereoscopic video through. I mean, that's really what they've done here. A better kit, but, you know, you could probably make a poor man's version of this. A research paper about the design and contrast of the Star Cave appears in the current issue of Elsevier Journal of Future Generation Computer Systems, FGCS, available online at Science Direct. DeFanti's co-authors on the Star Cave, a third-generation cave and virtual reality OptiPortal, include CALIT 2's Gregory Daw, Jürgen blah 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 blah, a bunch of list of names of guys here involved with that thing. The Star Cave represents the third generation of surround VR rooms. DeFanti's team built the original cave automated virtual environment, or the cave automated virtual environment, which is a cave system at the University of Illinois in Chicago in 1991. Second generation model built 10 years later at EVL is now the standard surround VR technology, is widely used around the world and marketed by MechDyne Corp. The first and second generation cave requires viewers to wear battery-powered shutter glasses, and the Star Cave provides an improved 3D experience that allows viewers to wear only lightweight polarized sunglasses. Interesting. The room operates at a combined resolution of over 68 million pixels, 34 million per eye, distributed over 15 rear projected walls and two floor screens. Each side of the Pentagon-shaped room has three stacked screens, with the bottom and top screens tilted slightly inward by 15 degrees, increasing the feeling of immersion while also reducing the ghosting or seeing double that bedevils VR systems. Because the Star Cave is designed to help scientists, DeFanti and his team made sure to incorporate the latest computer graphics processing using 34 of the newest NVIDIA chips that can generate highly complex images. 34 high-definition projectors, two per screen, create very bright and left and right eye visuals, i.e. stereoscopic 3D per screen. Each pair of projectors is powered by a high-end quad-core PC running on Linux with dual graphics processing units and dual network cards to achieve gigabit Ethernet or 10 gigi networking. So the question here is, can it run World of Warcraft? You know, because I've got people that will just lock themselves inside of that thing. You know, they will. With the advanced networking, the Star Cave is the best virtual reality porthole within the OptiPewter network. So, pretty much, that's the Star Cave, as of 2008, I guess, is the ultimate in first-person, you know, shooter technology right now. So, just in case we're wondering, you know, just in case you want to know who's got the champion gloves on, that's where it is. Which, you know, hey, VR, I remember when VR was a big deal. You know, I went down, I paid the $5 to go jump in the VR setup. We all did it. You know, we all got to fly around the stupid hang glider and stuff and feel like we were in Tron, and just kind of thought, how is it possible that VR looks really bad? And that's why people, you know, they want to get into VR, but unfortunately video game graphics have gotten so great. How the hell can you go from playing Call of Duty, you know, to Second Life? That's a pretty big step down. I hate to say it, but it is. It's, the dynamic is totally different, of course, but that's the problem. Because people don't care about the dynamic, they want the graphics, you know? It's difficult. Maybe when Second Life gets to that point, or maybe there's a way we could, you know, bring the unity and unification of a group into another gaming universe, so that you just have, like, these avatars, like, you treat it like Richard Morgan, right? He wrote these books, Altered Carbon, Woken Furies, and another one. But anyway, they're really good books. And in there he talks about how people travel through space and time, travel mostly through space, by broadcasting their consciousness like it's a pattern, and you load it into a body. It's like sleeving. Very, very cool books. It's just very, very cool. It's some Recomedia you want to check out. Read some of Richard Morgan's stuff. Very, very cool. Anyway, in Big Brother Online news, you know, there's more and more of this, so this is why I think it's very important that we are aware of this, even within Second Life. A lot of people, you know, sometimes within the virtual sphere, within the internet, you need to be aware of that there are going to be people who you can't see, but are there, and they're monitoring you. Okay, you are going to be watched. Okay, so you have to be careful of that. But in Big Brother Online news, WMR has learned from government sources that the Bush administration has authorized a massive surveillance of the internet using The Bush administration has authorized massive surveillance of the internet using as cover a cybersecurity multi-billion-dollar project called the Einstein Program. Now, if anybody's ever heard about this thing, the Einstein Program, billed as a cybersecurity intrusion detection system for the Federal Computer Systems and Networks, WMR has been told that the actual intent of Einstein is to initially monitor the email of the web surfing activities of federal employees and contractors, and not in protecting government computer systems from intrusion by outsiders. So it's a monitoring system, which you can bet that after they use that for a while, they're going to put it on us. Very, very interesting. In February 2008, President Bush signed a directive that designated the National Security Agency as the central administrator for the federal government's computer network and security. Although Einstein is primarily a program under the aegis of the Computer Emergency Readiness Team, U.S. CERT, and the National Cybersecurity Division of Homeland Security Department, WMR has learned that it has the personal support of the Director of the National Intelligence, the DNI, Mike McCornell, a former NSA director. Einstein is advertised as merely conducting traffic analysis on the .gov and .mil domains, including data packet lengths, protocols, source and destination IP addresses, source and destination ports, stamp and time information, autonomous system numbers. However, WMR has learned that Einstein will also bore down into the text of email analyzing message content. In fact, most of the classified budget allotted to Einstein is used for collecting information from the text of messages and not the header data. So it's a snooper. We have the Gen 1 Agent Smiths. In fact, WMR has learned that the most classified technology being used for Einstein was developed for the NSA in conducting signals intelligence, SIGINT operation on email networks in Russia, codenamed Pinwheel. The NSA email surveillance system targets Russian government, military, diplomatic, and commercial email traffic and burrows into text portions of the email, searching for particular words and phrases of interest. NSA eavesdroppers, according to NSA documents obtained by WMR, there is an NSA system code named Pinwhale. Interesting. The DNI and NSA also plan to move Einstein into the private sector by claiming the nation's critical infrastructure by nature overlaps into the commercial sector. There are classified plans already budgeted in so-called black projects to extend Einstein in surveillance in the .com, .edu, .int, and .org, as well as other internet domains. Homeland Security's Security Secretary Michael Chertoff has budgeted $5.4 billion for Einstein in his department for the fiscal year 2009 information technology budget. However, this amount does not take into account The black budgets for Einstein proliferated throughout the U.S. telecommunications network contained in the budgets for the NSA and the DNI. In anticipation of the regulatory problems inherent with domestic email surveillance by the NSA, the Bush administration has ensured the Federal Communications Commission and Industry Association have been stacked with pro-surveillance loyalists to ensure that Einstein is widely accepted and implemented. This reminds me of Echelon. Anybody here remember Echelon? Echelon was this idea that came out where they were using it in Britain, and then it sort of faded out. You don't hear about Echelon anymore. But I would suspect that this is exactly the same kind of thing. And, you know, there's going to be... If you think the U.S. wouldn't be able to use this and, like, hand it out to Interpol, I mean, this is all tools of the one world government, right? So it's interesting very much to... It's very interesting to see this. And how it develops, you know. I wonder how this is going to... How is this going to be used, you know, for text and whatnot. But still, you know, it's just for text. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta think, well, you know, so they can read some of my text. What are they going to get from that? Well, there's other more sinister plans afoot. And there's lots of ways that they can, like, you know, generate need. They generate want. And then they implement, you know, a plan to make you think that they're solving a problem, which doesn't really exist. This is why, you know, Baldy coming out and with that stage note today, where we want to make sure that when you come to the show and you're here online inside of the show, you act in a respectful manner. You're not going to go to a movie theater and start freaking out and throwing shit everywhere. Okay, you're going to act in somewhat of a civil fashion, you know, and if you don't, you know, there's consequences to that. And the reason for that is not because people are power tripping. The reason for that is for this next story here. In Cyberscape Surveillance, Cause and Effects. And thank you very much to Bucky Fuller for sending this one out. Now, let's talk about, you know, some spin here. And this story, and I'm going to say it, you know, this story should spell the end of the first Anarchistic Penguins. And you'll see my logic for this, okay? Virtual bombing hits online stores. The popular Second Life virtual gaming environment has suffered its first terrorist action. The so-called Second Life Liberation Army, SLAY, a homegrown terrorist cell of users, has staged an online attack for the first time, calling for the democratic decision-making of the virtual community. The terrorists bombed an American Apparel outlet, a Reebok store as part of a campaign for more say in the affairs of the online community. An avatar called Marshall Calheel told the LA Times in an in-world interview, "The population of the world should have a say in running of the world." The action highlights a growing tension between the long-term Second Lifers and those who have just recently joined, and the corporations who have followed them. That's the story, okay? That's what they're talking about. It's a funny story, but you got to understand is that the people who are reading this stuff, they don't understand that no one really dies in Second Life. Okay? They don't understand that this is all just pretend. Right? They don't get that. So what they do here is they create this great, that's a fantastic piece of, you know, fear-mongering cause. Okay? Now, that leads us to the next story, which is the effect. Right? The claims were made by the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity, IARPA, as part of the U.S. intelligence community, which looks at developing technologies. The virtual world is the next great frontier. In some respects, it's still very much the wild, wild west environment, the organization said. Unfortunately, what started out as a benign environment where people would congregate and share information and explore fantasy worlds is now offering the opportunity for religious slash political extremists to recruit, rehearse, transfer money, and ultimately engage in information warfare, or worse, with impunity. IARPA recommends setting up red teams of intelligence operates who would investigate virtual worlds and track potential threats. Let me say that again. IARPA recommends setting up red teams of intelligence operatives who would investigate virtual worlds and track potential threats. The CIA already has a presence in Second Life, for which it uses for meetings and training. However, the IARPA report has been questioned by privacy campaigners. Jim Dempsey, policy director for the Center of Democracy and Technology, pointed out the government has said the same thing about mobile phones and the internet. They want control of this technology and make it even easier to tap than it already is. When the government is finished, every new technology becomes more powerful and surveillance tool than the technology before it. And that's why It's because of organizations like that. You don't want to make yourself a target. Okay, right after 9/11 happened, you know, I disbanded Cult because I didn't want people going to jail because they were called a terrorist. Okay, and I would beg you, upon bended knee, that you need to be very, very careful in your online world, okay, lest they come for you. So you must be very careful who you talk to, who you're with. You must be very not careful. Actually, you know what? Don't be careful with who you talk to. Be careful what you say. Think about what you're saying. You know, make sure you present yourself in a very correct way. You know, you wouldn't go walking down the street, you know, throwing shit at people. You just wouldn't do that. You know, so we should probably start thinking about how we treat each other and how we treat people within a virtual environment. It's a very interesting concept and brings into question the nature of morality, especially within, you know, the virtual environment. Some interesting stuff there. Some interesting ideas. But the bottom line here, definitely, is stay out of jail. Stay out of camps. You know, you just, you know, you want to avoid them, really. You know, don't get caught. You know, so a little bit of an ounce of prevention and all that kind of stuff. So we got some good daily hacks today, though. On thinking of that, we got 25 must-have thumb drive apps for geeks. Thank you very much to Misanthropic Gods. While traveling, and with traveling and the use of many different computers, many geeks and geek girls often find them. What? Geek girls? Geeks is a genderless term, but anyway, often find the need to have a uniform set of tools handy wherever they may be. I put together a list of 25 invaluable portable apps that can be installed on an iPod or a thumb drive, and they're really, really cool. It's a hell of a good list. Make sure you check it out. As well, for the USB, you might want to check out TiddlyWiki. Thank you very much to Nihi. TiddlyWiki is a single HTML file which has all the characteristics of a wiki, including all the content functionality, including editing, saving, tagging, researching, and the style sheet. Because it's a single file, it's very portable. You can email it, put it on a web server, or share it via USB stick. But it's not just a wiki! It has powerful plugin capabilities. It can also be used to build new tools if you have control over how it looks and behaves. For example, TiddlyWiki is already being used as a personal notebook, a getting things done productivity tool, a collaboration tool for building websites. This is for building website. This site is a TiddlyWiki file for rapid prototyping and much more. You can import and export data and from all sorts of places. Very, very cool. And as well, a really good one from Nihi as well. Another one from Nihi. It's Build Your Own Robot Brain. Very, very interesting stuff. The idea is that you have a robot that's controlled by a single microprocessor. This is all virtual. The robot has input ports, e.g. compass, armor, level, heat level, and output ports for steering, firing, scanning, and so on. You have to build an AI for the robot, and then you send it into an arena with other robots, and they have their AI built by someone else. Apart from the utility and learning assembly, if it ever becomes necessary to defend against a hostile mechanoids, it may be useful to have already developed a few relevant skills. But I think it'd be a really cool way to learn assembly language that you can use to, you know, talk to computers with. Hey, what the hell? Let's build some robots. Who doesn't like it? And as well, let's not forget some XP driver packs. I know. Must be bad, but hey, these are familiar to anyone who has installed a decent pirated copy of WinXP, WinBorg, BlackXP, TinyXP, etc. I recommend all of these, by the way, although BlackXP, if you aren't going to be doing anything mission critical on the box. So these are driver stacks that you can use. Very, very handy stuff. Some other Recomedia, other than the Richard Morgan stuff, which I've talked about before. Hey, Sean, I've recently been introduced to a new anime series that might catch your interest. It's called Toshoken Sensu, or Library Wars. The premise is this. In the not-too-distant future, Japan will be embroiled in a low-intensity civil war between the national government and local authorities. The bone of contention? Media censorship, enforced by the feds and opposed by paramilitary forces headquartered in local libraries. Put simply, libraries have their own team of soldiers whose mission is to protect books from being seized and destroyed by the governments. It centers around a female lead character who's a new recruit. So it actually plays out more like a lighthearted than the theme suggests. However, it does remind me of Year After Now, and as far as I know, it's not on DVD yet in North America, but you can easily find a fan sub on a torrent. That was sent in by Grey Ghost. Thank you very much. I didn't know much about that. Very cool. always good to check out a little bit different anime from time to time. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast by the Wogs Who Care. And if you cannot donate, please do distribute. But if you can donate, if you can, it'd be great if you could subscribe. You know, subscriptions are really where it's at. Rather than making, like, some people are like, yeah, you know what, I'd love to donate, man. I'm going to save up, like, $100 and send that to you. I'd much rather have guys willing to throw me a coffee every month. You know what I mean? Because, honest to God, very few people can afford a lot of cash. But if you were able to say, you know what, yeah, okay, I'm gonna pay you $5 a month. I can do that. I can do $5 a month. Well, think about that. If 1,000 people were to all say, yeah, I'll buy Sean a coffee at $5 a month, guess what? I'm able to build the compound. Because honest to God, I don't think people really have a problem with giving money to people. It's just that they want to know what they're going to do with it. If you guys just all think I'm going to get fat, live in a mansion somewhere, and have hot and cold running hookers, well, maybe you'd give me the money anyway, because that'd be kind of cool. But, you know, honestly, if you honestly think that the person who you're giving money to is going to be using it to further, you know, causes that you believe in, I don't think there's anything really wrong with that, do you? You know, I mean, really, I don't think there is. So if you can donate, please do so by going to the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out some Psytrance. And I'm going to try fade out now. I don't know, I'll try to find something. I never really know. Usually I'll mix the show later, I'll listen to it, and I'll think about it for a while. But I'll find something that fits, don't you worry. I always do. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, hey, that's what server said. End of line. I wanna-